Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning. It is the 24th of March, although I realized that partway through the day yesterday, I started referring to it as the 24th of March.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's the 12-hour cycle on my watch. Isn't right, you know what I mean?
You got to do, you know, you're 12 hours ahead.
You have to do military time.
Yeah, that's what I need to do. Much less. Do you really?
Well, actually, my watch broke, but when it works, yes.
Okay. Well, the iWatch will take care of all of that.
Wrong.
I'm very, very certain of it. Welcome to the panel. We certainly are glad you're here, and we will give you some information on how you can be part of our conversation in just a moment. Let me introduce our panel to you. In this corner, we have WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
I could have been a contender.
Bantamweight. You're talking to me.
I could have been a contender.
Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Heavyweight. Feeling well.
Thank you. And our good friend and buddy and Tuesday regular Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Thank you very much. A reminder, you can join us as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org to share comments on what is happening in the world and what we are talking about. We would love to hear from you. Occasionally, we'll even read from your letters, and we only ask that you keep them brief and to the point, and we'll...
And civil.
And don't
and
swear.
Civil. Yeah, that's right. Just civil. That's all. That's all we asked for. And I think that's it. WAMC.org/roundtable if you want to get in online and do it the interactive way, or just send us a note directly. roundtable@wamc.org. All right. With that said, we move on to the news of the day. And, of course, the story that broke just several hours ago that is quite distressing is the plane crash in the French Alps, which the news there seems quite tragic. We're just starting to get in details from the French government, who is releasing information as it becomes available. And I'm just bringing up the latest here, unfortunately, very slowly. So I apologize. But do you know what the death total was?
I think it was 142 on the passengers and six crew. Yeah, 148.
Yes, 148. So the German plane carrying 148 passengers.
Oh,
crashes in the French Alps, an Airbus A320 operated by Germanwings, a budget subsidiary of Lufthansa, and crashed in southern France while en route from Barcelona to Dusseldorf, and carrying 142 passengers and six crew members. So that information just coming in.
It's a very safe plane.
Right. It's a standard, like, medium distance jet, and there's just thousands of them, I guess, in service, and they're very reliable.
There was a BBC report earlier today, might have been before this newscast, where they said the last crash of one of these in Europe was in Ukraine, and obviously there's a good possibility that was shot down. So these are very safe, great track record on these planes.
It is, and we, of course, we don't know what caused it yet. We don't have any word other than the wreckage has been located, which right now is that's a plus right now that we know. And unclear when the pilots last communicated with air traffic controllers. About 40 minutes after takeoff at approximately 10:40 a.m., radio contact with the aircraft was lost. So.
Right, and there was an emergency message and then no contact. So speculation is that it was something fairly catastrophic. The pilot apparently tried to keep the plane under control for a good 7 or 8 minutes. So we'll know more soon.
Yeah, they'll be able to recover. I mean, in all likelihood, they'll be able to recover the black box fairly quickly because it was on the ground. And the speculation is that this was probably full of tourists from Germany who like to go to Barcelona and like to go south for this time of year. And
places to go in the world is Barcelona.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing better.
Remarkable.
We should note, I mean, we don't know. It is assumed that there were no survivors, but it is not known. And the president of France has said that there, many of the victims were German, and the conditions of the accident, which have not been clarified suggests that there might not be any survivors, but at this point we do not know.
Right. And it's so. At something like 6,500 feet.
Yes.
And fairly remote, so it may be a while before we know more.
You know, it's so interesting because we don't know anything. What our first thoughts of are when we hear of a great tragedy, you know, of this kind. I mean, I know that the newspapers almost always have one line in how many Americans were on the plane because they think people are interested. And then we all think about all our friends who are in France, for example, or in Germany for the summer and who are moving around. And you say, oh, my God, I hope that everybody that I know, you know, is all right. So we project into the tragedy all of the things that we worry about. And, of course, there's always terrorism. And we know that. You know, if a plane falls off, I'm certainly not suggesting this is what happened, but these are the things that flood your mind when you hear about a tragedy of this kind. Let it be noted that both Ray and Mike are nodding their head, you know, somewhat tolerantly when I said that, and that. But that they've done it on the radio so that nobody will know.
Well, I think the sad reality is that when there is an air disaster, that's one of the first things we all now automatically think about. We don't think of it being mechanical or weather. This was evidently not weather-related because it was clear weather, according
virtually
to
no
news
wind.
Reports. Yeah. So immediately we're in a world where that terrorism comes to mind when you hear about a plane crash. But we don't know, and more will come out, I'm sure, very shortly.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about other issues, and we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Lucky Chocolates, Saugerties, New York, offering a cafe with a seasonally changing menu, including local produce and organic ingredients. LuckyChocolates.com. Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts, working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence. Elms.edu. And Hudson Valley Goldsmith, specializing in custom design, fine jewelry, and repairs, created live in an open studio in downtown New Paltz. Also featuring the work of more than 10 fine jewelry artists from across the U.S. HudsonValleyGoldsmith.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Again, we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel apologized on Monday for making what were widely condemned as racist comments last week and saying that Arab citizens were voting in, quote, droves. But even as he spoke with a group of Israeli Arabs gathered at his Jerusalem residence, the White House issued a new signal that it remained furious. The Mr. Netanyahu for campaign comments that also appear to close the door on a two-state solution to the Palestinian conflict. In the days since the Israeli election, Netanyahu has been denounced for two statements he made toward the conclusion, his assertion that no Palestinian state would be established on his watch, and his alarm over voting by Israeli Arab citizens. He has been trying with limited success to backpedal on both. Alan, as far as the president's furor and how they're dealing with it, what do you make of this?
Well, it is obvious that the Israeli leadership under Netanyahu is now taking President Obama a lot more seriously than I think they were in the beginning. I think they are scared to death that the United States is going to do something with the United Nations or basically sanctify a Palestinian state because I think that Netanyahu, who thought he had Obama on the rocks, but he forgot that we were dealing with a president who has a while to go, but not that much, but enough time to do damage if he wants to. And if he wants to break the logjam, which has clearly been there, and which Netanyahu basically admitted was his fault on the Palestinian state, that he has the tools to do that. Remember, I believe that Israel is our number one recipient of foreign aid. I think Egypt is number two. There is obviously the idea that maybe that's not going to continue. There's also what could go on in the United Nations. So I think Netanyahu may have misread the political cards here and is now backing up as far and as fast as he possibly can.
So how do you backpedal successfully when you to the point where you have two things going? One, where it just doesn't seem like a political stunt because it obviously has real political ramifications.
It does. And you know, yesterday the chief of staff from the White House gave a speech to the leading progressive Jewish organization in the country, in our country, suggesting that the way to keep Israel viable and to keep it, the state as it should be, was to do the two-state solution. And there's both in your face to Netanyahu and also the idea that you can sell the concept that a two-state solution will work. That's what I think. I mean, I think that's where they're going. I think that the president has now taken the number of Netanyahu. And I think Netanyahu thought he had it all because his speech was so well received when he gave it. It was an excellent speech. But now I think that they are looking it all over again and saying maybe we made a mistake. And I don't know how to put this without getting too much mail. But when you are dealing with somebody who is trying to bully you, and I think that's what Netanyahu was, thinking that he had Obama where he wanted him. When you're dealing with somebody like that and that person backs off, the bully or the person who you think is a bully backs off, you win. And then no matter how much they come back and say, please, 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 I didn't mean it, you've got the advantage and you make sure that you keep it until you got what you wanted.
Alan, do you think that the next time a anti-Israel move comes up at the Security Council of the United Nations, the UN may hesitate to use its veto power and let something go through? Is that the fear here?
The U.S.?
Yeah. The U.S., I mean, yeah. Yes.
I think that is clearly what the fear is, but not really. If it's one of these virulent, anti-Israel things, the U.S. is not going to sign on to it. I think what they're worried about is that the U.S. will huddle with some of its partners and come up with a plan that they think is doable and not harmful to Israel. In other words, a two-state solution or saying that the Palestinians, granting statehood to the Palestinians. I think that'll be very different than going along with one of the nutcases that are always being proposed. And I think it will probably be met with a lot of success if they want to do it that way. And I think they know it. I think these, you know, Christine Lavin, I always talk about her folk song, What Could He Have Been Thinking? Prince Harry dresses as in a Nazi uniform, What Could He Have Been Thinking? And Netanyahu really was convinced he had this president on the run.
He seems so different. The attitude seems so different. The literal apologies, inviting Arabs who live in Israel to his home, et cetera, is that?
And remember, characteristic. Mike, there is a backstory here. Obviously, there's all kinds of communication happening that we don't know about. There's White House to Israel communication. There's State Department communication. They're hearing, the Israelis are hearing from the Germans and the other people about what they hear. And whatever it is apparently struck a real sense of fear into Netanyahu.
Remember, there is also a sense of bluff here. There's no doubt the Obama administration is not happy. But remember who the number one ally we have in the Middle East is.
No, I don't think there's any question. I think that there is a genuine commitment to making this two-state solution because it protects Israel. Look, they are our number one ally, in whether people like it or not, they are. And we're not going to do anything to hurt that relationship. But, you know, you when you have a war and you have the incredible armaments of the United States, which have protected Israel in the past, and the amount of money that we give them for armaments and everything else, I don't think they're in a position to thumb their nose at the president.
Given how long all of this has been going on and of course, interrupted by an election, so I guess it's kind of not fruitful to discuss a timeline of what of when we're going to see action, of whether it's going to be immediate to try to do a make good here, or we're going to kind of tread water for a little while.
You know, I don't know any more than anybody else does, but I can obviously think that if I'm in Netanyahu's position and I'm trying to put myself into, and his advisors are saying, "Hey, Bibi, I think we may have made a mistake here. I think we may have messed up." Then you don't really know what the threats are. You don't know if there's going to be a UN resolution tomorrow, whether it's going to be down the road, whether somebody has said you're not getting those tanks you wanted or you're not getting that money you wanted. Then you really have to start backpedaling, which is clearly what we're seeing right now.
Well, will there be at least a temporary cessation in the new settlements, Israeli settlements in the Arab territories?
Don't know.
Yeah,
don't
I mean, know. That'll, I've always that'll be thought, demonstrative I've of always how serious
thought, I've
is.
Always thought it was incredibly dumb to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
Always. Always said so.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll take your letters. We will take on many other topics as well. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue. We will be right back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We thank you very much for being with us as always. Let me remind you that you can join the conversation roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Do we have letters, sir?
Oh, yes, sir. Sure. Tom says, trying to deal with the Middle East is like herding cats. And Don, our old friend, says, regardless of Mr. Netanyahu's unfortunate actions, the fact remains that the leadership of the Palestinians have openly called for the destruction of Israel and the killing of Jews. These positions are clearly spelled out in the text of the Palestinian National Covenant and the Hamas Charter. Who will be Israel's Palestinian partner in the next two-state solution, which we all desire? Good point, Stone. And then Stephen says of Bibi, his rhetoric brings to mind Al D'Amato, that was then and this is now. Al D'Amato said in one of the great statements of his time, they said, but you said so, and he said, that was then and this is now. And there you are.
Well, I mean, you can evolve. One can evolve one's position.
Sure.
It was rather abrupt in Bibi's case, but...
And now abruptly reversing.
2 days later.
And then Kirsten Gillibrand, she evolved, remember?
On
Chuck
guns.
Chuck Schumer and gays, I think, at the time. I'm not sure.
Was she not?
I don't know about that.
On
guns, she did evolve. And that's what they said when they're standing there pointing her. She'll evolve. She evolved. And then we have Michael, who wanted us to look at David Brooks's article. Part of why anti-Semitism is on the rise is the way the left in general has allowed opposition to Israeli policies to lead to increased tolerance for dislike of Jews in general. Interesting concept. And Joseph says, the real harm is that Netanyahu has identified all opponents to his policies as anti-Semitic. The world is opposed to his policies. The world is not anti-Semitic. Well, there are those who
think
it
is. Some of the
world is. Those who think it is. Okay. And Robert says, here's hoping Alan's right. Netanyahu's despicable campaign tactics deserve a serious real-world response. Words of condemnation alone won't cut it. And then I'm going back to the top and to Peter. He says, I believe in Israel's right to exist and support them to that end. But sometimes the oppressed become the oppressors, and that's from Peter. That's what we got so far.
All right. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's move on to other topics. And, we have more casino news.
Oh, exciting.
Yes. I think it's been a couple weeks, and we've been bereft.
We got a craps table in here, you know?
got lots of going on in the casino and gambling front. And, you know, it's interesting. Today, I heard on WAMC that in Springfield, Massachusetts, they had the ceremonial groundbreaking
today
for a casino there. And that seems to be the point of a Rockefeller Institute. That's a unit of the State University of New York. They're a think tank that did a study nationwide that suggests that the revenue that governments are getting from casinos has peaked, nationally anyway. And, you know, we've seen casinos closing in New Jersey. I think four or five closed in 2014. And, you know, Foxwoods in Connecticut was having some problems. And now we're adding three in New York, possibly a fourth now in the southern tier. The State Gaming Commission kind of opened the bidding process to add one to the southern tier. They were under some criticism for not locating one there because that's an economically depressed area. And meanwhile, there's a plan on the table, came out last Friday, to put a boutique casino, really a video lottery terminal casino, in the city of Rensselaer at the site where they were going to put the full-blown casino if they were able to get the license. It would be right across from downtown Albany.
Is that in the Constitution?
That you can have video lottery terminals?
Yeah.
Well, Capital Region OTB is the sponsor, and they're going along with them. The state legislature would have to go along. Chris Churchill, our columnist today, looked into this story that broke on Friday where the Rensselaer is proposing this, and some politicians were signed on to it. And many of the politicians that were announced as supporting this are saying, no, we didn't support this. Phil Streck, an assemblyman who represents Colony and Schenectady, was one of them, who said he really was unaware that he was being linked to supporting this plan for Rensselaer and maybe putting a few up the street here on Central Avenue, a few of these video lottery terminals up at the OTB Teletheater. And the reason, George Amador, the state senator representing parts of Schenectady, also said the same thing. I mean, they don't
they
want
that electronic crack.
Yeah, well, I mean, they don't want to see too many. They don't want to see saturation, which is the worry that the Rockefeller Institute
right.
is already talking about. I mean, how many casinos is too many casinos?
Look, gentlemen,
are
we
there?
We have sat around this very round table or
amoeba-like
round-shaped table, and we have said, there's too many. They're going broke. So now Rockefeller, prestigious institute, comes out with what we've been saying all along as an operating hypothesis. Well, I don't know that they're proving it, but, you know,
round found evidence to support
round
that.
Table where all wisdom emanates from. And why? I mean, it just keeps coming. And, you know, if I'm the governor of New York, I say, well, you know, let these fools. No, I don't know what he's saying, but let these fools put their money in. We don't have to put any money in. We don't have to care about this. Because what do we care? They build it, there'll be some jobs, and then they'll close it, just like in Atlantic City.
Well, getting state-licensed casinos was a major effort of the Governor Cuomo's first 4 years, and he did achieve that. And now we'll know by the end of the second 4 years whether it did indeed reap any substantial benefits for local governments and schools like it's supposed to.
Well, it'll take a year or two for them to be built and then get an operation. So you may not even see really substantial numbers by the end of his term with
which
to assess.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's probably five or more years down the road. But the Rockefeller Institute, which is looking at this, does see that there's a slight rise in gambling proceeds in New York. But that is largely due to the gigantic video lottery operation at Aqueduct Raceway, which really is
enormous.
Profitable.
And for those who don't know what the VLTs are, the video lottery terminals, they look and play exactly, for the user experience, exactly like a slot machine would. So the back end is slightly different, the way it operates. It makes it a video lottery.
It
looks like a slot machine.
It's kind of built on an algorithm that makes sure that there's a certain percentage of winners and not, and a little different than Las Vegas, but the experience, the fun of winning, and you can win big money.
So you sound like you've been in one of these places.
Yeah.
I have not.
I did one time. Uh-huh. I was at a retirement party at the Saratoga Racino, and I walked through the video lottery terminal area, so I can say that I've been there.
It's pretty good. They've done a lot with it.
Okay, so wait. I'm sorry, Ray. I don't quite understand what you're saying when you say it's pretty good.
It's very nice. It is a casino-like experience, whereas right. In the beginning it was not.
Well, now the question for you, Ray, because you've been watching this for a long time.
Yeah.
Are the people who would go to Foxwoods or to other places likely to stay closer to home because it is closer?
That's
to
a great
home.
Question. And now that they are, the Connecticut lawmakers are considering putting a boutique casino very near Springfield on the Connecticut side. So that would be a Mohegan and Foxwoods partnership. So then what happens? Now, if you've never been to these Connecticut casinos that are there now, Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, they are enormous. They are cavernous. They're huge. And if users go down significantly with all the casinos going on, what are they going to do with those places?
But it seems to me, and Ray, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems to me that part of it is the experience, right? Part of it is you go to a place, it's a resort, whether you're going to golf, you're going to a golf resort,
yeah.
Or in this case, a casino where you're going to go gamble for a while. So you go, you see a show, you can go golfing, you
yeah.
go do your thing, and you get away for the kids for a couple of days or bring them, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
And you go.
Preferably
and
the former.
That's a different situation than having a couple video lottery terms up at a OTB setting where there are a myriad of ways that you can lose your money.
Right. Absolutely.
Right? I mean, you know, it's really no different than playing Keno or playing Powerball or whatever
right.
else is up
and
there.
And Alan mentioned crack earlier as a metaphor for this.
Video crack.
You take some exception to that, right?
No, there is crack already in the state lottery. They have these numbers and you can go in every, 10, 20 minutes, whatever they do
within four locations within less than a 5-minute walk from this building.
Right. And it's essentially like Keno. You just pick numbers and then every, I don't know how many
minutes,
they just come up. So the state's already doing this. Getting back to Mike's story, I'm still confused as to how they could put video lottery terminals anywhere they want because they are essentially slot machines.
They would need the approval of the state legislature.
But you don't need a constitutional amendment, which they already got.
No, not for video lottery terminals.
That's amazing.
They're allowed already. I mean, they have those already. They needed the constitutional amendment to do the full Las Vegas style games, poker and.
But they had them already. But they had to be licensed for a certain area, right?
Right, and they were at raceways. They connected to the raceway. Well, OTB would sort of create that legal opportunity to be a partner in this. But it's not going anywhere. Chris Churchill, our columnist, is right. I mean, it's already been hit with so much opposition. And the worry is saturation, that nobody wants to see the Schenectady casino be compromised before they even break ground.
Right.
And even then, it's questionable whether that's going to be a long-term gain, as you're speculating, Alan.
I'm against all of it.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm against all of it, including the casinos, is I really think it's a terrible drain on our poorest citizens who can hardly afford it.
Well, surveys show that the typical casino attendee is someone in just below the middle of the middle class, but in the middle class, and it preys on women in their 50s, and they spend lots of money. I mean, so it's...
I would say it probably depends specifically on the casinos themselves.
Sure, yeah, and the ambience, et cetera, yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and talk about other issues as well. We welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Live Well Albany, New York, providing intensive outpatient psychological services for treatment of eating disorders in and around the capital region. AlbanyHPA.com.
Thank you.
Good morning and welcome back.
What?
I may have to take a hand.
Yeah. He has to take a hand.
Yeah. Give him a hand.
Give him a hand. There
one hand
go.
Clapping. That's here right. We go.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. It's very nice to have you with us. And we have letters, and then we have more topics to discuss. But first, Letter Central.
Ann says, it seems to be common knowledge that it is the compulsive gamblers, repeat customers, who keep casinos going. Like other addictions, compulsive gamblers are probably about 10% of the population. Would 10% be enough to keep all those places going? Ann from Kingston. And Bonnie says, now imagine one casino in tiny bucolic Kent, Connecticut. And I think this little symbol here, I'm not...
That's a frown.
Is that a
yes.
That's a frown.
Mm-hmm, yes.
I see. Okay.
And poorly done, but a frown.
Just smile upside down.
And Christian says, I might suggest a flight swift in the way we discuss... it says flight swift, but it's actually, I'm quite sure, slight swift. No.
Slight shift?
What the hell?
I might suggest a slight shift, it says flight swift, in the way we discuss Israel. May I suggest that Israel is not the United States' number one ally, but rather that we are Israel's number one
in
ally.
In the Middle East, who is a bigger ally of ours than Israel?
The King of Jordan is very nice to us.
That's true. Okay, there you go. That's two.
And by the way, and the Egyptians do make common cause with the United States, mm-hmm. and there is
the dictatorship there.
Okay, and Brendan says, let's see here. Please do not use my last name on the air. Okay, done. It's not even in there. I don't know why local and state governments keep latching onto casinos as a bulletproof solution to revenue issues. We've got online gambling and casinos everywhere you look, and we're doing is sucking money out of the pockets of other New Yorkers.
That's, we don't have online gambling here.
Delaware has started online gambling, which could really put a wrinkle in everyone's expectations.
I guess Jersey has done it as well. If you're in the state proper, you may do that.
And they're moving big because there's plans to go right to the Meadowlands with a lot of these slot machines.
Oh, really?
To compete with the Aqueduct Raceway success.
So go down halftime of the Giants game and lose a couple of hundred.
Yeah.
Go back, the Giants will lose.
R says, the plane crash of the German airliner is such sad news, and the problems in the Middle East seems like they'll never end. That is why people tune into the March Madness basketball tournament. It's because we need something good to cheer about every once in a while. And ever since when the Danes lost, I was quite depressed.
Well, that's when you stopped following March Madness?
I was quite depressed.
Amazing.
Explain something to me, guys, as long as we're on that subject for just a second. You fill out the brackets, right?
Right.
And then you send them into...
Or nowhere.
Whoever.
Boxwoods,
you keep
I think.
Track.
I
no, you keep no, track of no. it for your own.
No. There's this contest that goes on, and if you win and you get them all, then you get $1 million.
Some offices will do pools, but we don't do that.
No, what Alan is talking about is that CBS, who airs all of the games, has a bracket challenge.
Oh, yeah, and ESPN, I think, does too.
Yeah, I think it's ESPN. Yeah. And you get a lot of money if you win.
You put all your teams in, and if you are if you're the top person, I don't know how much money, I don't know. The one I'm in, you win, if you are the top person, you win a trip to next year's NCAA tournament.
To put it in perspective how difficult this is, them talking about this on ESPN.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it was. But as of the end of the weekend, there was one perfect bracket left in the country out of the millions.
Yes. But the one that I read said
contest.
There were none.
Oh, maybe it's down to none now.
Maybe it's none.
I'll tell you, my bracket's awful. I have it on my desk.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I still have the final two. I might be.
Really?
If Kentucky loses, I'm golden.
Is that right? Because I had the...
You had the Danes going?
Oh, yeah, the Danes going all the way.
Playing by themselves, basically, because that's the only team you knew. Yeah.
But I think what people do is when their team loses, they find another team to grab onto.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I had Villanova going all the way.
Oh, well, I have NC State, Joe.
All right. Right. There you
really?
Go.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Okay, so Bill says, in 1967, the name of the game was winner-take-all. Israel would cease to exist. However, if in 67 the Arabs had thrown in the towel and accepted the 1967 map and made peace, there would be no West Bank settlements. The Palestinians are their own worst enemies, and I want the blessings of peace for them. How about a compromise? The Palestinians run a semi-autonomous civil government in a demilitarized area while Israel secures the borders and provides security. And that is Bill from Sussex, New Jersey. I ever tell you guys I went to Camp Sussex?
Oh, no, yes.
I guess I didn't.
Large footprint. No, yes, is what you just said.
You have a large footprint of your audience.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see. Alan.
The letters are overwhelming.
Yeah.
I favor
two-state
solution.
Filled with angst today, isn't he?
I favor a two-state solution, but I do not believe it is a viable option for at least a generation. Take a look at the demands of the PA.
Palestinian Authority.
Yeah, of course. And the Charter of Hamas, and examine the, quote, education of Palestinians in both Gaza and the West Bank. It is equivalent to Hitler Youth, including summer camp for five-year-olds that combine hate with paramilitary training. Do you believe the Palestinians would be satisfied with a state next to Israel or continue fighting for a state, for a state in place of Israel? I think Alan, who's a PhD, by the way, makes sense. I mean, I think that's really a very important question. And there are a lot of people who say you got to have guarantees, you got to try, at least you got to try, and you got to make sure that if there is such a an understanding, that there will be peacekeepers who assure that it's, you know, that the terms are kept. But saying we're never going to have it, that's another whole story, because they've got a whole world to contend with.
On his watch.
But I think Alan is making some sense here. I do. Okay, so Tom says, whatever, gambling is not a productive industry. We need an industry that actually makes something. Basing your state's future on gambling is a fool's errand. And And then Ryan says, no, we're not doing that one today. Okay, and Tony says, Alan is young enough to remember that the U.S. policy was the Henry Luce backed Taiwan is the legitimate country in the U.N. until the traitor Nixon changed it. And now we get lead-based toys and cancerous wood products from overseas. Now President Obama's chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, on Monday made a striking announcement on behalf of the administration by telling a crowd of Jewish American political activists that Israel's military, quote, occupation of the West Bank must end. This may mean we could change our minds a bit. Anybody understand it?
Well, what I was surprised, just as a sideline, is how many times do you remember the chief of staff of the White House giving speeches and being quoted? This is kind of interesting that carry the water.
I'm sure the argument was, should the president go or should his chief of staff go, you know, to do that? And it was brilliant because, you know, the J Group, what do they call it, J something?
J Street
is the preeminent progressive Jewish group in the country, and so obviously this was a good place for the White House to go and make their statement. There we go, and that, I think, my friend Joe, is it.
All right. We got about 5 minutes, so we'll go to his. We'll get to a story or two, but probably just one. I will tell you, I know we've discussed this before on the show, the Utah governor signed the bill making firing squads the state's backup execution option. We talked about it as it worked its way through the state legislature. I have to say that the thing that really got to me was the execution chamber picture. Did you all see that? That is unbelievable.
It is
much like an electric chair, but there are sort of these sandbags on either side to, I guess, to
absorb the bullets.
Absorb the bullets
in case you miss.
Right.
Ricochets.
And it's a chamber, which is what it is. And there are leg holds, and you're kind of fastened in like in a roller coaster, and then that's where it happens. The decision comes as a shortage of drugs used to carry out lethal injections has forced states across the country to scramble to find alternatives to carry out executions, which has prompted some states to alter their lethal injection protocols. And more than a decade after Utah largely moved away from firing squads for executions, the state on Monday officially reversed course and made that the backup method of execution.
Has it been proven safe and effective?
Meaning?
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
They always say the execution drugs have to be safe and effective. Well, they're safe, all right. You die, you know? Look, it's a moral decision. Do you put people to death or not? After that, this is academic. When you're dead, you're dead. firing squad seems to be just as effective as lethal injection if, in fact, it is morally correct and the right thing to do to execute somebody. What difference does it make?
Well, it came up in, you know, with a poll.
It seems that, barbaric to me.
You're killing someone. That's barbaric, dude.
I agree with you.
Well, Joe, another story that you had recommended we take a look at today has to do with a survey done in Massachusetts about whether people are in favor of the death penalty in the case of the Boston Marathon bomber. Clearly it seems like the sentiment is not for the death penalty, but the reason—
More than half, say.
Yeah, the reason is a lot of people think it's preferable to have him spend life in prison without parole. That might be even
I agree with that, but as I said, I think yesterday— What I don't want to see happen, since those wonderful people disappeared that they killed, I don't want to see somebody making the argument 20 years from now, which they're doing with John Lennon's killer and everything else, that he's rehabilitated and he should be let out. He's a different person now. Yeah. He's not a different person.
Well, I mean, one of the academic, if you will, Ray, analyses of it is that people in New England look at the death penalty more utilitarianly, and they see that it really hasn't reduced violent crime, and it really hasn't stopped the kinds of things that it was supposed to stamp out. So, and it costs so much because of all the appeals and all the political brouhaha. Sure. It's a lot easier just to throw people in jail and throw the key away.
But there is the biblical injunction about an eye for an eye. I'm not arguing that. I'm not arguing it myself, but I'm telling you, there are a lot of people who believe it.
Yeah.
Let's send it there, and we will certainly.
We've executed another hour, haven't
we? Thank you. Thank
you for that,
Ray.
I
appreciate it.
It ain't coming back, people.
Fool them again.
That's like car talk.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back. Thank you.